Welcome back, everyone. We got another episode of Dirt Talk. Currently, it is Sunday morning, and I'm very excited. I'm a little, under the weather, a few too many drinks last night, but we're back in business with a great conversation with Mr. Tom Gardocki, also known as the Dirt Ninja. How are you doing, Tom?
I'm doing pretty good. I am also a little tired, but that's because I have a 2-week-old baby. So
different stages in life. Different stages in life.
It is.
Yeah, yeah.
You'll get there eventually.
Is it your first child?
It is. Yeah, we had my wife and I had a baby boy, Owen, on the 6th. So actually, we're almost 3 weeks old. So we're doing pretty good. Little lack of sleep, but that's kind of to be expected. And I'm kind of thinking at this point I need to invest in like a diaper factory or something, because I'm pretty sure we could supply ourselves from the factory.
Yeah. That's probably pretty big adjustment for the first kid, huh?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've had a lot of friends who have had babies recently, so we were luckily able to talk to them and figure out what we needed, but nothing really can prepare you for actually having the kid and taking care of them. And, you know, you're in the hospital and then they send you home and they're like, yeah, good luck. And they don't really tell you too much, so you kind of just figure it out on your own. But he's alive and well, and so I guess we're doing good.
Were you allowed to be around in the hospital with all the coronavirus stuff?
Luckily, we were. It was a little screwy. We went in the middle of the night, around midnight, and so you have to go into the emergency room because the main hospital's closed because of COVID. And they take my wife in, and they have to take her up and make sure that she's in labor. And I had to go back out of the emergency room and sit in my car for 20 minutes before they called me and told me. I'm like, I'm not a doctor, but I'm pretty confident she's in labor. Yeah. So it was a little screwy, but it was nice enough. You know, I was able to go in. We weren't able to have any visitors. So once you're inside, it's kind of business as usual. But it was just a little weird how you had to get in.
Gotcha. So... Yep. I guess going into the whole dirt thing, where did the name the Dirt Ninja come from?
So I actually started off as a different name on YouTube. So I started on YouTube in 2010. So I've been on for quite a while.
Wow.
And went to Facebook after that and then Instagram most recently. And it was just, started having fun, to be honest with you. I watched YouTube as a kid, watching people dig holes, and I was like, maybe I can do that. So I kind of started off as that. I think my parents, I kind of have a similar story to Chris, Let's Dig 18, and just kind of my parents gave me a digital camera one year for Christmas and taking pictures at the job site, and I was like, oh, maybe I can make some videos. So you go back on my channel a ways, you can find some pretty awful videos, but you gotta start somewhere. And it's kind of evolved over time to what it is now. Just to be honest with you, I have a ton of fun with it. I talk with so many people from all over the world. It's such a great resource for any business owners or anybody in the industry. You can talk to anybody. You know, you're a business owner and you're not leveraging social media in some form, you're kind of doing things wrong, in my opinion. You have all that knowledge out there, and you'll find if you message people, the majority of people will get back to you and are more than happy to give you information about whatever. It could be a product or a machine or how they do something or office stuff, you know, doing the books. Like, all that knowledge is right out there. It's just, you know, it's a cool time that we live in that you can, like, when we bought our tilt rotator, nobody really had one in the United States. So I talked to people in Europe and asked them what brands were best and what attachments we should get. Like, how would I have done that even 10, 12 years ago? Like, it just wouldn't have happened. So you have all those resources there. It's a cool space.
It is pretty wild. I mean, I wouldn't have a business without it. There's no way. And that's how we've done a lot of our hiring. That's how we've done a lot of our business development. That's how we've created some of the change we have. It's all around social media, which is, it is a pretty wild thing. What did the videos when you first started out, like what were they and what was the business like? And I guess, where were you at, you know, 10 years ago, as far as digging holes go?
So 10 years ago, I would have been working for my parents. They own a landscaping / hardscaping business. They've been in business for, I think, about 45 years. So a long, long time. So that's kind of how I got my whole start in construction. Been on the equipment literally since I was 4. I've been running machines on job sites since I was 10. So it's just kind of that whole thing got me into it. So all the videos and content from back then would be from, you know, things I was doing for their business. Mostly just, it was all, you know, it's compact equipment. Skid steer is your favorite thing, and excavators. So, oh yeah, you'd love it if you go back there.
Yeah, yeah. So, I guess I know what I'm doing the rest of the day.
Yeah. Oh boy, don't go down that rabbit hole.
So you kind of just made it up as you went?
Yeah, literally there was no like end goal. There was not like, I want to be famous or I want to make a ton of money or anything like that. It was just like, let's post videos and see what the hell happens. And it never really took off, to be honest with you, until like, I think it was a solid 2 years that, you know, it was just like, I'm just going to keep uploading for these 10 views that I get. And then I had a video go viral, and it was of me running a mini excavator, stacking 2 beer bottles on top of each other.
Nice.
And then putting a golf ball on top. And it was, I think it's around like 2 million views today. And I got, I think in like 3 days, I had 1 million views. So it was kind of cool. I got interviewed by my local news station. I had used Sam Adams beer bottles. They asked permission to repost them, repost the video on their website. I was on like the front page of Yahoo. And so it was just kind of one of those things that just happened. And then my YouTube page really took off from there. And that's when I actually like started earning a little bit of money off of YouTube, which was nice to help, you know, pay for some of my cameras and stuff like that. And it kind of took off from there, and it is now.
So when did you leave the family landscaping business and go off on your own? Because nowadays you're off on your own. You know, it's Next Era, correct, is the company?
New Era.
New Era, yeah. Excuse me. Yeah, New Era.
Yep. Well, it actually used to be Next Era, but I got a cease and desist letter from Next Era Energy.
Wow.
They're like the largest energy producer in the United States. They own like 25 nuclear power plants.
Yeah.
So I talked to my lawyer and he's like, yeah, unless you want to like spend $100,000, I just suggest changing your name. So that's what we did. So that's a fun little story.
You got their awesome attention though. I mean, that must feel good.
Yeah, we did. We did. Yeah. It didn't feel good when you have to, I mean, think about your business and if you had to change everything that was in your business name to something else, like credit cards, accounts, like truck payment, like everything. It was a nightmare. But
well, and that's why, I guess for our business, that's why I went with what we went with, because it was just a totally made up name that I knew was original. And so I could, that was one of the, there were a few other names and I wish I remember what I wanted to go with initially, but there were a few others that were already taken on social media, which is how I decided on BuildWit, because it wasn't taken anywhere. And I knew that for a fact, cause it was just made up. So we've been able to swipe it everywhere. So we haven't had to go through that, fortunately.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I wish I got
a little more research.
Well, I always like it when people get cease and desist letters, because that means you're doing something right, in my opinion. And I think they're kind of funny. Yeah. And I haven't got many of those, which has bummed me out.
I'm sure they're coming.
Yeah, one day. So when did you officially start the company?
So my partner and I, Craig, started the company 5 years ago in 2015. So I actually still help my parents out. So I'm not, technically, I guess I'm not a full-time employee of my own business yet. Although some weeks I still manage to work 40 hours in 3 days for myself. But I still help my parents out. They're very close to retirement, and they're another extremely small business, and they rely on me a lot to just, you know, help them out, run the equipment and drive the trucks, you know, run the job sites, do stuff like that. So I actually still work for them Monday through Wednesday.
Wow.
And then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and sometimes Sunday, work for myself. So started 2015, we hired our first employee, Pat, who, you know, totally got me on this podcast. I'm going to have to hire him as my agent. He is probably the greatest person in the world. He did pay me to say that.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Yeah,
none of that is true, but
exactly.
Yeah.
There's a little asterisk. You just can't see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I hired him in August, and, so we kind of operate on like 2.5 employees right now.
So I guess with the landscaping company, what happens when your parents retire? I mean, where does the company go? Do you keep running it, or does it dissolve? Like, what is that? What happens there?
Not really interested in their business.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, I've always been one person to kind of want to do my own thing.
Because
it'd be very easy for me to step into their business and just keep it going. They literally don't do any advertising. They're super well known in the area here. But I've kind of lost my interest in the hardscaping. I've always really enjoyed running equipment. It's really my passion. So I figure if I can have the excavation business and, you know, run equipment, then I think I'm going to be a lot happier in life. And I also look at landscaping and hardscaping is extremely labor intensive.
Yeah.
You know, even if you have all the latest and greatest tools, which my parents do, it's still, you know, my dad had knee surgeries, elbow surgeries, wrist surgeries. You know, it's like one of those things that just kind of beats up your body, and seeing what they've, where they're at now, you know, like health wise, I don't want to, you know, go through that or try not to. So, and they've always been very supportive of me, of, you know, whatever I wanted to do, which is awesome. And they weren't always like, you have to do this, you have to take over the business. It was kind of whatever I wanted to do was whatever I wanted to do. So it was really nice.
So with starting the company, I didn't even know you had a partner until I met him at Con Expo this past year, along with our good friend, Pat. How did that come about? Cause I've talked to a lot of business owners on here and just in general, and you know, most of the folks I've talked with, most of them don't have partners. So what was the line of thinking there as far as, becoming partners with someone from the beginning, and what advantages has that given you guys?
So I've known Craig for quite a while. We actually grew up in the same town, although I didn't really know him until I think it was like my senior year of high school. We ended up taking an engineering class together and got to know him a little bit. And then we both went to the University of New Hampshire for the same exact construction management program. And then we both stayed for business management as well. And then once college finished, I stayed in touch with him and we remained friends, and we'd do like little things on the weekends for people. We'd rent, you know, like my parents' equipment and go put in some sonotubes for a deck or, you know, little stuff like that. And in, so I graduated in 2009. In 2010, I started a real estate company with a different person. And we were looking to bring on another person. And so we brought on Craig.
Mm.
So it's the three of us. We still own the business. It's rental properties. And so I got to know Craig, and he got to know me as, you know, being more than just friends, because there's a big difference between being business partners and being friends, and hopefully keeping both of those together.
Yeah.
So, you know, I realized that you know, he was somebody that I could definitely rely on and that I could trust and that I could work well with. And I would venture a guess he would say the same thing, because rental properties stress you out a little bit when you get phone calls at 2 a.m. about heat not working and all the other crap that you have to deal with tenants. So it tells you a lot about people that you deal with in those situations. So I got a real good sense of, you know, how Craig would be. And we ended up doing some little side stuff for a local builder in town that I had a connection with. And we ended up buying his John Deere 200 excavator. And that was our first machine. We still own it today.
Wow.
And it's kind of gone from there. And to be honest with you, I think it works so well because we're very different. I do all the books. I do all the scheduling. He's not good at that stuff, but he has way more experience than me with on-site stuff. Like, he's 1,000 times better than me at reading plans and figuring out grades. He's the one who has his septic installer's license. I don't even have that personally. So he is like a rock star on the job site, making sure everything goes well. He's the one who schedules all the materials to get delivered, all our machines to get moved. So we kind of each have our own role. And I think that's why it works well. And we don't really step on each other's toes in those roles. Obviously, there are some points where that happens. But for the most part, we kind of do our own thing. And I think that's really why it works. And, you know, having two people that are really invested in the business, I think just gives us a little bit more of an advantage over some of the other small companies here, because we have two people.
Yeah.
So like, I can go do an estimate on Monday night and he can go do one on Tuesday night and we can both do the quotes. Like, it's just, it's like spreading that workload, you know, out to two people helps a lot.
Gotcha. And I've thought a lot about this too, like in my own business, do I take on partners or a partner, or we haven't yet, but I guess that's the thing about business. There's really no right or wrong way to do it. It's just whatever works for you guys. Have you guys ever got into it over certain issues? Have you ever totally disagreed with one another?
I would say yes. It's very rare, to be honest with you. I can't really think of a specific instance off the top of my head, which means it doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
You know, it's more about, I would say we disagree on like how to do the job, maybe, the most. And it's just a difference of opinion of, you know, what part we should do first or whatever. And to be honest with you, he's usually right. because he knows, you know, to be honest with you, I'm still learning. I never laid drainage pipe in my life before owning this business. I never installed a septic system. So, you know, it's, I'll be like, okay, just get on, you know, I'm good at running equipment and moving dirt. So I'll get on the site and just want to go crazy and move dirt.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, well, maybe we should think about this and do it in the proper order. So.
Gotcha. I guess at what point did you guys have to hire someone on? Why go hire Pat? What prompted that decision after a few years of going at it with just the two of you?
It was our growth. So we're very conservative with our growth. We want to grow slowly. And we also don't want to be a big company. I'd say, I don't know, this is where we might disagree, but, somewhere around 10 people, I'd say. So we kind of got to the point. So it was a struggle, to be honest with you. So when I can only work on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and I am the better equipment operator. So we always tried to like do our schedule where Craig would, you know, do some things that he could do on his own, because there's only certain things you can do on your own as well. So maybe he'd put together a septic system and then I'd come in at the end of the week and run the equipment and help him backfill. And so it was just a huge struggle, like logistics wise, with only having 1.5 people basically. So we just got to that point where we were basically buried in work And we said, well, hell, how the hell are we going to get this done without losing all of our builders and our clients and everything like that, you know, without pissing them off because we can't get it done in a timely fashion for them.
Yeah.
And we thought about hiring somebody, and it's kind of funny, you know, Pat had helped us out on a couple of like weekend projects and got to know him, met him totally through social media. So that's another way, you know, we found him through social media. So again, business owners should use it. And he came in and ran a dozer on a project for us for a weekend. And we just started talking. And he, you know, basically said he wasn't that happy with where he was at. And I was like, oh, well, you know, maybe we could make something work. And started talking to him. And I was like, you know, I don't know if we can offer you, you know, he worked for a big company, and I don't know if we can offer you, you know, what you're making and benefits and all that type of stuff. But we ended up making him an offer, and he ended up coming over. So I think the biggest thing is that we're just very flexible. You know, he's got two young kids, and now Craig has a kid, I have a kid. So we're all in the same boat. And, you know, when Pat needs to drop his kid off every Monday at 8 o'clock in the morning, that's fine.
Yeah.
Like, we know the schedule. He can be in at 9 on Mondays. And Craig, when Craig needs to go pick his kid up at the end of the day and he's got to leave at 2 on Tuesdays, like, that's no problem. Like, we just make it work, you know? So we're very flexible. It's, you know, you need time off, you need time off. Everybody's got a family. I think some of these big companies, especially around here, like, lose sight of that. You know, it's, when you hear some of the companies that not allowed to take a day off from April 1st to December 1st, and Saturdays are mandatory, you know, these are people that work for you. And when you treat them like that, you know, I guess you need to expect that they're going to leave. So, you know, yep. We try and treat Pat fair and pay him a good wage. And, you know, I think he's happy. So,
well, I've never understood that. Most companies, they just have no understanding of people's lives and just right. Control these people's lives. Like, no, you're here, you know, 7 to 5, 5, 6 days a week, sometimes 7. And that's just how it is. And we give you a paycheck and that's all you get in return from us. But we're in control of you. Otherwise, it's just, especially for our generation, that's not how we want to do things anymore. And that's not how it should be and not how it has to be with so many flexible jobs out there now that our industry is now competing with, because we're not just competing with ourselves, we're competing with Uber and Amazon and all these other companies as well that are a hell of a lot more flexible than what we offer. And so that's what we try to do with our own business too, is just, hey, if you have to go, you know, pick up your kid or you have to go take a day off, then do it. You don't need to go ask. I mean, just let us know, but go do it, because I know you have a life. It's not all about work here. Yeah. Yeah. That goes a long ways. Has it,
it does.
Like at what point do you just have to go 100% in on the excavation company? I mean, how long do you have working for the landscape company? Isn't that unsustainable? Especially now that you're a parent. I mean, now that your time is probably more strained than ever before, how long does that last for?
Yeah, it is unsustainable. Luckily, my parents are probably going to retire in the next year or two. So, I don't know. It's a tough thing to deal with, to be honest with you, because I obviously don't want to, like, run out on my parents at the last minute and kind of screw them over. Because my dad's 65, so, you know, he's getting older and he can't really do all the physical stuff, so I don't want to, like, send him back into the field, you know what I mean, to go lift pavers when he's 65 years old. So it's a very, it's something that I struggle with constantly. My hope is that they retire sooner than later.
Yeah.
And I think they might do that. So we'll just have to see what happens. But, you know, and they know that too, that I am very busy. You know, I could be full time right now, no problem. And keep myself busy with our own work, and they realize that. So, you know, any days they don't really need me, they let me, you know, come do my own thing. So, you know, they're very receptive to it, and they do the best that they can. But yes, at some point I will have to break away if they don't retire.
Gotcha. What, I mean, how do you balance that too with, you know, having a wife and now a newborn? I know the newborn's still a new thing, but how have you balanced that, you know, dating and then, you know, marrying someone? I mean, working 7 days a week, that's most of your time. So how have you been able to do that? And we got disconnected.
Modern technology.
Gotta love it. My question upset you that much, huh?
I don't know if that was me or not.
I have no idea. All right. Well, as far as like relationships, friendships outside of work, how have you balanced that while working 7 days a week? I mean, your time seems pretty damn strained. You got your company, you got your parents' company, you got the rental company, you got a lot going on, and it sounds like you just kind of work all the time. So how do you make time for life outside of work?
You have to. You just have to put things aside and just take time. I'm very fortunate. My wife is very understanding. She is awesome. She actually grew up, her parents own a small excavation business, and they've very recently retired. So I don't want to say she's used to it, but it helps a little bit. She's very understanding. She knows what it takes. But you just have to take time and put it aside and do it. And, you know, I try and be as efficient as possible with anything that I do. So, I mean, if you see all my stuff online, like we literally own all the top of the line stuff for making us more efficient, making job sites go quicker. But it goes all the way back to my office and computer and, you know, the programs we use, QuickBooks, and how we do our quotes and like all that stuff, just because I know that if a computer program is going to save me a half an hour a day of paperwork or something like that, then I'm going to do it because it's going to get me an extra half an hour, you know, with my family.
Yeah.
So I'm a big believer in all that type of stuff to kind of make you do the same amount of stuff in less time.
Gotcha. It is amazing how you guys do look a hell of a lot bigger than you are. Like for 2.5 people, your company, I guess for what I see on social media, because I've never seen you guys in person, it looks like you guys are pretty damn big. I mean, especially the recent jobs that you guys have been doing and taking on, they're not small jobs for 2.5 people. And then all your equipment is really nice. I mean, you guys have some top of the line stuff for such a small business.
Yeah, I guess I kind of get it from my parents. My parents have always been willing to invest anything. Literally, if one of the guys sees something on YouTube that worked for them and they're like, this will make my life easier, my dad will go and buy it.
Wow.
And I try and do that same philosophy. Unfortunately, stuff for excavation is a little more expensive than landscaping. Yeah. So we have to kind of do it when we can. But yeah, I mean, I would say we do the work of a regular company around here that has 6-8 people, something like that, with basically 2.5 people, just with the technology and the machines and everything that we use. We, on average, I would say have like 8 to 10 house lots going at once.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's kind of crazy, but it allows us all these things that these tools that we implement, you know, allow us to keep up with that workload. And, you know, we're doing some pretty cool stuff, to be honest with you. I'm very proud of the work that we're doing right now. I never thought that we would be working for the people that we're working for, have the equipment that we have, you know, in 5 years of being in business. I had this conversation with Craig just a couple of weeks ago. I was like, you ever think we'd own a 36-ton excavator at 5 years in business? And no. So it's been kind of crazy. And I think it's a big testament to, you know, the quality of work that we do, our attentiveness to our customers, you know, the testament to Pat and how he's helped us out. To be honest with you, you know, he's been a huge asset to us. And I don't know, it's been really good. I'm very proud of where we're at.
Do you ever get just super overwhelmed with how much is going on?
Absolutely. Yeah. My biggest problem is being overwhelmed with how we're going to get the work done. Because we're so small, we don't have everything that we need to do a job. You know, we don't have a low boy. We don't have trucks to deliver materials. So it's not just getting the material or getting the jobs done. It's how do we get them done? Because we rely so much on other people because of moving equipment, getting materials delivered, some subcontractors that we use. So it's just, we rely on a lot of other people. So we have to be extremely, extremely organized. We have to have a plan every week of what we're doing every day. And, you know, it's construction. It almost never goes to plan.
Yeah.
So we always joke, we make our schedules a week in advance and then it changes every day.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to just make it work. You know, we, with the subcontractors, like a really, really big thing with me is all of my bills that we get paid almost the same day that I get them.
Wow.
I know a lot of companies pay them like once a month or once a week or stuff like that, but I always like to be ahead of them. So I almost write a check every single night to somebody for a bill that I've gotten. And I think that gives us a huge advantage because when I make that phone call at 8 o'clock at night and I need a machine moved the next morning, they're going to move it. Because they know they get paid right away.
Yeah.
So I think that's actually been a huge asset to us of just paying your bills. You know, I talk to so many, you know, all these guys that move equipment for us. I'm like, you know, how's it going? Oh, great. But nobody pays us on time, you know? So take care of your subs and they'll take care of you.
It is crazy. You don't understand before you get in a business that some people just don't pay. And
yeah.
You can't really do anything about it. It's like, well, are you going to threaten legal action, or you're kind of screwed as a business owner when people don't pay, or maybe they pay, but yeah, they just pay super slowly. So you've already done the work. You're out all that money and you're just sitting around waiting for it to come in the door when you don't have bags of money just sitting around to throw at things. And so you're sweating bullets. Yeah. Like, when am I going to get this money? And that's pretty damn common.
Yeah, especially as a small, you know, new business, it's, you know, when the bank account gets down to like 20 grand, you're like, okay, I've paid all my bills. So as Mr. Starbucks says, get the money, get the money, get the money. So
yeah.
He's very true.
Yeah. With the business, so you guys both went to college for construction management. Does that come into play?
That's a great question.
Like, what were your key takeaways from college?
The business side of it.
Yeah.
Was my key takeaway, yeah. I mean, I learned, you know, how to, I did learn stuff from the construction management, you know, how to read plans, how to run CAD, all that type of stuff, grades, did a surveying class. I went to a tech school, so I got an associate's degree in the construction management and associate's degree in business management.
Okay.
So, you know, I probably could have learned the same things just working for somebody else. I don't think I would have learned the stuff about business from somebody else.
Gotcha.
So I very much think the business program was worth it. You know, it's something that I get asked all the time from people like messaging me. Oh, I want to get into it. You know, I'm thinking about going to college or I'm thinking of getting just straight into the trades. And it's a really tough thing for me to answer. Just because college does teach you a lot, and you learn a lot about like who you are and social things and how to get along with people. And it's not necessarily the things you learn in the class from college that can be the most beneficial, I think. So I think it really just depends on the person if it's worth it. They got to really, you know, want to do it, I think.
I agree. I for me, I think it is somewhat unfair for society to expect an 18-year-old kid to know what the hell they're going to do for the rest of their life. In college for me, because I went 4 years in engineering, and it did help me just kind of explore life and meet new people and learn more about myself. And when you come out at 22 years old, it's not so much the knowledge, but you just have a much greater perspective on life that you did not have at 18 years old. And then from there, you can actually make mildly educated decisions on what you want to do with the rest of your life. So I definitely agree with you there. It is interesting though, that both of you guys have degrees, because that is unique.
Yeah. I mean, for our situation, I think it's definitely been beneficial, especially with, you know, Craig did business stuff as well. So even though he doesn't do the books, he understands, you know, how stuff works on the business side, which is super important, because I tell people all the time, like, you can be a terrible businessman, but a great contractor, and go out of business because you don't know how to manage your finances. Well, and you can be an awful contractor, but really good at the books, and you could probably make it work.
I totally agree. Well, I see a lot of people in this industry. They're great contractors. They can dig a hole like no one's business. But as far as operating a business goes, they're horrible at it. And a lot of these people, they're not going to necessarily go out of business. They're just kind of, you know, kind of spin their wheels, I think, for a long time. A lot of them, they just sit there and basically kind of make it for decades and don't really go don't go beyond that, just because they don't understand the business side of things. It's amazing. It's just amazing to me how little time they spend on the business. They work and work and work. They're just the hardest working people. They'll do anything in the field, and then they forget about the actual business itself. And that's how everything runs.
Yep. Yeah. You got to do all the work on the back end.
What are some of the business mistakes you guys have made?
I don't know. We haven't made all too many. We definitely should have hired somebody sooner. I can tell you that for sure.
Yeah.
It was, you know, last year before we hired Pat was rough. We were working 7 days a week. I would get 40 hours in with my parents, and I'd get 40 to 50 plus in for myself. And it was like an unsustainable, you know, pace. I don't know. Things seem to be going pretty well, to be honest with you. And I'm sure we're going to be coming up on some hardships, and we'll have to face those as we go. You know, we've had a couple people not pay us. That really sucked. It was luckily not a lot of money.
Yeah.
We should have stuck with our gut. It was, you know, homeowners, and you just kind of get that bad feeling when you go and do an estimate, and then you decide to do the work anyways, and then they don't pay you. So it's kind of like trusting your gut. You need to work on that for sure.
It is amazing.
So it hasn't been too bad.
Well, it's just amazing how accurate your gut can be. And I mean, we've gotten out of deals that purely based on gut decision too. And then, you know, a lot of the best decisions of my life have been gut decisions, and you just can't really quantify why. And a lot of times there's no basis, like logical basis, as far as why your gut's like this and why you need to make your decision this way. But then you look back on it, you're like, oh, thank goodness. Like, wow, that could have been bad. I don't know why. It's amazing how accurate your gut can be with such limited information sometimes.
Yeah. Trust your instincts.
Yeah. All right. Well, as far as winter goes, since it is somewhat coming towards us, I guess probably faster to you than me, you guys also clear snow, or what's the deal with all the snow removal?
We do. However, we're just a subcontractor for Outdoor Pride Landscaping. They're a big outfit in town. Our main focus wants to be dirt. So the first year when we were in business, we quoted a couple sites to plow ourselves and didn't get it. And we had, Craig and I had both worked for Outdoor Pride in the winters before. And Craig had actually worked for them full time at some point before we started our business. So we have a relationship with them. We're just subcontractors. And we've actually been cutting back every year on the snow plowing. None of us particularly like doing it. You know, it's never snows from 7 in the morning to 5 at night. It's always in the middle of the night at terrible hours. So we actually only have, we used to plow with our loader and a pickup truck, and now we just have the loader on, and I mostly run that, and then Craig and Pat actually just run some of their equipment in the winter.
Gotcha.
So it's a good relationship. We do a lot of, we just actually finished up a commercial project for them last week. So it's a good relationship with another company that we have, and you know, they're happy to have us for whatever we can give them in the winter. So
I've always been fascinated by snow, because I'm from Arizona and we don't have much of that in Arizona, especially Phoenix, Arizona. So I never grew up around it, never understood that snow clearing, snow removal was a thing. And then now we spend a lot of time back east, and it is fascinating to see these contracts and how they work. Because like you said, I mean, you'll get 6, 8, 12 inches overnight, and it's just flat out, get the damn snow out of there as fast as you can, work as much as you can to just get the job done. And it's so sporadic, like you can't really predict it. It's a crazy business to be in.
Yeah, it's just something we don't want to get into.
Yeah,
it's, the outdoor fight. That is their game. They are a snow removal company. They do a lot. I mean, they have 35 loaders, 35 skid steers. I think they employ like 400 people in the winter.
Wow,
it's crazy. So they, it's like opposite of us. They do commercial maintenance, but they kind of take it easy in the non-winter months. We like to take it easy in the winter months.
Okay.
So, you know, you always want to have a couple things I've learned. You always want to have a mix of like hourly rate jobs or like per push, they usually call them. So, you know, if you get 2 to 4 inches, it's this price, 4 to 6, it's this price, and so on. And then you also have a mix of like flat rate. So it's X amount of dollars for the entire snow season. So you kind of always want a mix of that.
Yeah.
Because obviously if it's all flat rate and we have a huge winter, you're going to lose out.
Yeah.
If you're all hourly and we have no snow, you made no money.
Mm.
So it's an extremely tough business. In my experience, you either have to be all in or pretty much all out in order for snow plowing to actually make sense profit-wise, because most of the companies around here just do it to keep their employees on through the winter.
Yeah.
And to keep making the payments on their equipment through the winter. That's the only thing. Like, they're not actually making a great profit unless you are like who we sub for, and that is their, you know, that is their thing.
That is crazy.
So it's a tough business.
Yeah.
It's like blood money. It sucks.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Yeah. I do enjoy watching you do it though. I've always watched your snow removal videos, and there's something, I don't know, they're almost calming to watch, because it's all dark. So you just have what's lit up right in front of the loader. It's so pretty, you know, fresh snow. I could just sit there all day and watch those videos.
It's amazing. It blows my mind. My plowing videos are probably my most popular videos, and I think they're the most boring thing in the entire world. It's amazing to me, even after 10 years of putting videos online on different platforms, it blows my mind what people find interesting and what people don't. Because I'll spend 2 days editing a video, and it'll get 1,000 views.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, just throw up a video of me, time lapse of me plowing, and it's, you know, 100,000 views. I'm like, it doesn't make any sense to me, but I've definitely noticed the plowing. People love the plowing videos, and I think it's all people that don't plow.
Yeah. They don't know how miserable it is.
Exactly.
So I guess going back to the social media thing, what are the opportunities that you've had through social media? Because you've done some pretty cool stuff, and that's how, I don't know where I met you originally, but it was maybe at Dimensions. You've had a lot of really unique opportunities. What are some of the opportunities you've had purely through your involvement in social media?
Well, I'd say the first one was I was on a Discovery Channel TV show called Machines of Glory. I was actually on with Chris, Let's Big 18.
Oh, that's too bad.
And a buddy of his. Yeah, I know. Justin, it was a ton of fun. They only end up filming, I think it was 3 pilot episodes. They did air, which was super cool, on the Discovery Channel, but it didn't end up getting picked up after that. And that, you know, they found me on social media, reached out, said, hey, think you might be a good fit for this. Do you want to, you know, audition? And kind of went from there. I mean, I've been all over the world because of this. NCON's taken me to Sweden. Caterpillar, Ryan Neal took me to Japan. I've been all over the U.S. visiting, like, Case in New Holland took me to their skid steer plant in Wichita, Kansas. I've been all over the place for Caterpillar in the U.S. It's just amazing, some of these opportunities. And some of the coolest ones have happened just in the couple last years, first being with Trimble. I was in the Dirt Kana 1 video and the second one, where we kind of made motocross tracks using all the Trimble Earthworks gear, and then had professional riders come in and ride it and made those promo videos. More recently, I'm one of the 3 CAT ambassadors, which has been a neat experience. And the most recent thing with that was I got to be in the new, when CAT revived their trial videos, I was one of the operators for their Pac-Man maze video. So it's just, you never know what can happen. You know, I always tell people when they always ask me, should I put up videos? Should I get into social media? I'm like, what's the worst that's going to happen? Nobody's going to watch, right?
Yeah.
You might as well put it up there and see what happens. So it just blows my mind that the opportunities that I've had because of it. And I mean, if you really think about it, I'm just a guy and I own an extremely small business with very, you know, like, I only own 1 NCON and they take me to Sweden and like, I'm part of this CAT thing. I own 2 pieces of CAT equipment.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, it's how you represent yourself online, I think, is why I've gotten these opportunities. I always try and be very genuine. You know, a lot of people ask me opinions on equipment and things like that, and I always try and be honest with them. You know, it's online, to me, it's all about reputation. It's taken me 10 years to build my reputation, and in one post, I could lose it all. And I don't think a lot of people realize that.
No.
And it's just,
I've had to balance that too, because I used to be a little too brash at times early on.
Mm-hmm.
And my points are still valid, and I don't regret what I was saying, but I wasn't delivering the message in a very good manner and ruffling a lot of feathers unnecessarily. And now that I'm in a position where I am now, it's, you have to be more political and thoughtful about how you do things. And I can tell that you're very thoughtful about how you position yourself online and the things you say and how you represent yourself. Like you're very, I don't think calculated is the right word, because it's still pretty, it's very genuine. And I love following along with you, because it's just, it is what it is. It's real. But at the same time, you can tell that you're being smart about it.
Yeah. You have to be professional. I don't know. 'Cause I reach a lot of people, and just to me, like, one thing that drives me nuts about social media these days is too many people just want to be famous.
I agree.
And it's a whole bunch of pictures of their face, you know, even in the construction industry. And it's like, I don't know, it should be really about the content, in my opinion. And I feel like because I reach so many people, I have a responsibility to put out good information, because there are way too many people that have a lot of followers and they put out some god awful, awful information out there. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there that don't know better.
Yeah.
And they're quote unquote influencing, you know, this younger generation. And unfortunately, they're influencing them improperly, would be, I guess, how I would say it. So that drives me nuts. So, I mean, like, I almost never show my face. I don't want my content to be about me. I want it to be about what I'm doing, my business, the stuff I use. It's never been about me. I love being able to walk around shows, and I do get recognized, but not that much. And yeah. I like that. I'm not one who wants the spotlight or anything like that.
Well, you just described about half my content, because half of it's totally incorrect and the other half is all about me.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. You do a good job. See, I like your stuff because you put a lot of humor into it and you're not afraid to say you don't know. The problem is that a lot of people can't say that. They cannot say, I don't know. And that drives me nuts. It's the same thing with business. When a customer comes to me and they're like, hey, can you do this? I'll be like, I'll be honest with you, we'll figure it out, but I have no clue what the hell this is. You know, it's the same thing with social media. It's like everybody tries to be an expert when they really aren't. And I think more than ever, people are starting to see through that with some people. And it's just, I don't know. It's a weird place.
And I feel like that's where my age is an asset, because I don't know very much. And so, I mean, I don't even know what I don't know. So I guess with my age, it's easier to admit that I don't know, just because I don't have a lot of experience with anything. And that has been one of the best things I've done as a business owner, is just admit that, hey, okay, so you want this done. Have we done this before? No, I don't know how to do this. We're going to figure it out together. We might screw it up. If we do, we're going to make it right. So at the end of the day, we're going to do it. We're going to do it well. We're going to make sure it's done right. However, getting there, I don't know how it's going to work out, but we'll just give it our best shot. That's how we've grown our entire business, is through those honest conversations. Like, I'm going into a lot of sales conversations this week about 2021 with a lot of the companies we work with. And a big piece of it is just going to be being super honest about our business. Like, hey, okay, so here's where we are at the end of 2020. Like, here's where our business stands. Here's where we want to go in 2021 from a dollars perspective. Here's where you fit into that. And just be super honest with them and almost ask their opinion. Like, so how do we make this happen? How do we make this a win for us and a win for you? It's those transparent conversations that have gone so, so far for us.
Yeah, I would totally agree. I mean, some of the jobs that we've done and some of these, you know, houses and builders that we've, you know, multi-million dollar houses that, to be honest with you, we didn't really have much business, you know, being the person doing that site work. But hey, we're going to figure it out. We're going to make it work, and we're going to make sure you're happy at the end of the day. So there's nothing wrong with admitting that you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Well, as long as you're willing to make the effort to figure it out.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You can't use it as an excuse, but I feel like there's more power in admitting that you don't know what you're doing than trying to act like you do. There's power in it. Yeah. And people think it makes them weak and vulnerable. I would argue the opposite. I would argue that it makes you stronger, because you're at least acknowledging your weakness and you're opening your mind up to, well, I don't know how to do it, but I want to learn. And that's how you do anything. It's not even business. It's anything. You know, the best operators are the ones that still show up every day with a chip on their shoulder, with something to prove and with more to learn. And we all know, I mean, we've been around, probably everyone listening to this has been around people that they show up and they act like they know everything. They're the worst ones out there to work with by far.
Exactly.
Well, on going back to Caterpillar, what was the behind the scenes of that Pac-Man video like?
It was cool. That was, so being a part of these videos, I always feel when the video comes out, it never truly captures everything that happened. And I think it's because they're always trying to make these short videos, and these videos could be like 8 minutes long, and I'm very confident people would watch them.
Yeah. But what do you know?
It was exactly, I don't know anything.
Yeah.
It was super cool. The guys that were there, you know, so it was during COVID. So it was very interesting. Cat, obviously being a big corporation, took like a gazillion steps to make sure we were good. Everybody was masked, and actually the five of us playing were the only people that didn't wear masks during the filming. It was great to get to know the other four players. You know, one of them was a customer. Pac-Man was a customer from Peoria area. The Blue Ghost was one of the finalists in the Global Operator Challenge.
Oh, wow.
The Red Ghost was the driver of the e-racing car for NASCAR, for Richard Childress Racing, so wow. The Caterpillar car. And then Pink was actually a kind of a pretty cool story. He is a professional gamer, I guess you call it. He has a YouTube channel, he has 3 million followers, so that is his job. But he actually used to be an engineer. So he had experience on job sites. He had never run a piece of equipment, but he at least, you know, knew what was going on. So it was just, it was a cool mix of people in it. And just being there, hanging out with them, talking with them, getting to know them was really neat. And then for actually like playing, so we filmed for, I think it was 2.5 days for that, whatever, 4-minute video. It's kind of crazy. So they kind of had like, you know, there was a script and a routine that we were doing. So there was, you know, specific movements that we made in the maze. And to be honest with you, it was pretty difficult because the maze is gigantic. It was, I think, like 130 by 200 feet, something like that. It was huge. And you have these little skid steers that you're running from remote control on the outside of the maze, and you're trying to drive through the maze with it. And they're all recessed down into the ground, like 4 feet.
Yeah.
So it was difficult, but it was a ton of fun. It was, you know, like you have some experience flying drones, right?
I've experienced crashing drones.
Okay. So that's kind of how the shoot went. Everybody was, you know, a little crashing because as you know, if the drone's flying straight away from you or straight towards you, it's pretty easy to control. Right. But once it starts flying across you, it's hard to exactly see where that goes. So it was the same thing with the maze. As you drove across and then you have to make a turn, you know, it's very disorienting of which way you need to turn and everything. So we had a couple crashes, but everybody was pretty good.
That was my next question. Cause I saw that. I'm like, there's no way in hell that they didn't run into shit with those originally. Like there's just no way it's, and I've run the remote control skid steers before. They're a little tricky. I mean, it's pretty clever, but at the same time, it's very tricky to run a machine that you're looking at, especially from probably as far as you were away from these machines. It's a whole different skill set than running a machine.
Yeah, we only had, well, I would say all the machines were marked up by the end of it.
Yeah,
that's for sure. And we only had one. We had one. I call it a significant strike. Maybe we had a bent rim on a skid steer by the NASCAR driver. Go figure. Yeah. but that was really the only thing. And luckily it happened literally at the end of the shoot. So it didn't slow anything down. So.
Nice. Well, we all know Caterpillar loves to sell parts, so that's not a problem for them.
Exactly.
And it's funny you say about the video and seeing it after the fact. We were talking about it this past week when it came out, and the video itself, we were all more interested in the behind the scenes of, you know, like Ryan Neal talking about how they actually dug it out and what it actually took to make this thing happen and what it looks like, you know, how they orchestrated this. All of that was far more fascinating than the video itself, in my opinion.
Yeah. The what went in to build that was absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, so how it was explained to me is they actually pushed all of that dirt out with the D11. Then they pushed it all back in lifts and watered it and compacted it and brought it all up perfectly flat. And then they worked from that flat surface and dug out the maze because what they needed was the dirt to stay vertical for like 2 weeks.
Wow.
For all their shooting and everything, you know, through rain or whatever weather happened. And they dug it. Brian, the operator, who is an excellent operator, dug it all out. I think it took him about 70 hours. He told me all GPS, no stakes. Like, you know, that's a very intricate thing to dig out. And to be able to do that all with technology is pretty freaking cool.
Yeah.
But I totally agree. You know, it's the behind the scenes stuff. You know, I like the original video because I was in it, obviously. So that's kind of cool experience for me.
Yeah.
But Celebrity. Yeah, the behind the scenes stuff, all the time lapse like they put out of you know, how it was created, you know, that stuff to me was just fascinating.
Well, and you know, the concept of the cat trials, I guess there were. So there's two parts to it. It's one, demonstrating the capabilities of Caterpillar equipment. and then two, appealing to a mass audience to get the Cat brand out there even further. So obviously the finished video was more so appealing to that mass audience. It wasn't really geared towards people that run equipment. It's geared towards expanding the brand, which I get, you know, it's Cat corporate, all that. Right. But as far as like Cat trials, showing the capabilities of their equipment, them digging that out with no stakes, like that in itself is freaking wild. Like that's all you need to show as far as demonstrating capabilities and technology goes. Like that's something else.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I agree. It's, I mean, I like these things that these companies are starting to do. I would call it non-traditional marketing for them, especially, you know, where it's not just, look at this piece of equipment. It's the greatest thing ever because we built it. And what else would you expect us to say? you know, it's actually like getting out there and doing something with the equipment, doing it with customers. That's a novel idea, right?
Yeah.
Like, show it in real life. So although some of these videos I think could be better, I think they are at least moving in the right direction, which is kind of exciting for me from seeing all the boring videos, you know, of, you know, I don't know why some of these big companies think that like YouTube is where you basically do like a press release on a machine.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, that's not what this platform is for. Show it. You don't stand in front of the machine and talk about it and put it on YouTube. That's not the purpose. People go to YouTube to watch action. They want to see movement, like show the machine working and maybe talk about it. Like, it just blows my mind that and it's not just Caterpillar, it's all of them.
They're all guilty of it. Yeah.
They all suck.
That was the most disappointing thing about me going to these press events early on, was they just pull up a fancy brand new piece of equipment with a yellow bucket on it and then sit there and talk about it. It's like, I don't want to hear you talk about all these made up statistics. I don't care. Like, Ryan, love you, but I don't want to hear you just talk about this damn thing. Just, can you get in it and actually run it? Can you actually show me what it does, for God's sakes? I mean, it digs, so dig with it. Let's not talk about it. Yep. That'll be a hell of a lot better than just looking at it stationary. It was kind of disappointing to me early on. That was one of my early disappointments as far as the press events goes, because it is just all about talking about stationary equipment. And it's like, who cares? No one cares. At least I don't.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I think these big companies, you know, especially in this day and age with social media, I mean, you have that platform. I mean, they all have lots of followers, and they just, and look at like how many people like posts of these big corporate companies or comment on them. It's horrible compared to, you know, their follower count. So I don't know why they're not learning that the content that they're putting out, that nobody really wants to see it. They want to see action. They want to see customers. They want to see, you know, something besides just the normal old crap that they've been putting up for 10 years.
You know, being more positive though, one company that you're involved in that has done, in my opinion, a very good job is Encon. They've really, I mean, shit, they that's how they've grown their brand across the entire country, is through people like you and Ryan Goodfellow and some of these other folks that have these Encons. Like it's what they've done is very clever, because they've made it all about you guys and your businesses.
I totally agree. And they're awesome people to deal with. I've been told that they have not spent $1 of marketing outside of social media.
Wow.
For the entire United States.
I'd say it's worked out okay for them. Yeah.
It definitely has.
Yeah.
It definitely has. Well, it just shows you the power of independent people on social media.
Yes.
You know, I know Ryan talks to a million people. I talk to a million people. You know, that's one of my big things, is I respond to every single private message that I get.
Wow.
You know, unless it's, obviously you can tell when they're just a bunch of crap.
Yeah.
But that's something that I pride myself on. And I think that's why I have a good connection with my followers. I know Ryan does the same exact thing, and I know that's why he has a good connection with his followers. So I get messages, I probably get 5+ messages a day from people who I've never talked to before, just asking about something that I own, or getting into the business, or just anything business related. And it's usually other small business owners, you know, looking, you know, they see my videos of either plowing or running the tiltrotator or whatever piece of equipment that we have that is making us more efficient, and they're interested in it. Mm. You know, it's a big difference when you can talk to these people, getting back to how we started this whole thing. It's like you can talk to other people that own these products and get their opinion. And 99% of the time, they're going to get back to you and give you their honest opinion of, does it suck or is it really that good?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's that cool time that we're in where there's so much information out there. And yeah, I mean, I think more of these companies need to start leveraging that. You know, you have all these people out there, especially people already using their products. It's like, why don't you get together with them and make videos or support them better or help them out better? So I think there's a lot of opportunity out there for that.
I agree. What piece of technology or piece of equipment has changed your business the most, would you say? Is it the Encon or what is that?
I would say the Trimble stuff.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that it just saves so much time. And it literally, especially being a small company, it eliminates that person from checking grades. And it doesn't mean, I argue with people all the time, it doesn't mean you fire that person who is checking grade. It means they can go do something else productive.
Yep.
And it's just, you know, especially for the work that we do, which we're primarily, you know, digging new houses and doing small commercial work, that Trimble system is getting used almost daily on every job. And it's just something that saves so much time. It's just such a neat tool. And, you know, I remember the days when I used to take a magnetic mounted laser receiver and throw it on the boom of my mini excavator. And that was my grade checker. And now you get to see where we're at with all this technology. It's pretty amazing.
The GPS technology and technology in general is a lot like social media, though. It's these companies, they don't take advantage of it for some reason as well. And especially smaller companies like yours, they'll say, well, it's just too expensive. I can't afford that. It's I'm too small for that. And but then I sit there thinking like, well, no, you're probably the perfect customer for something like this. And yeah, it's a big investment, but that's the name of the game. You have to invest in the latest and greatest to do your job better. And ultimately you'll end up making a lot more money than you are right now. It's not just wasted money. It's amazing to me how most companies don't take advantage of it still to this day, even with how proven it is.
Yeah. The number one question I get about, it doesn't matter what it is, it's how much does that cost?
Yeah.
And I firmly believe that is the wrong question to ask. It is, how much does that save you?
Uh-huh.
Because it doesn't matter how much it costs. I mean, it does, right? Because you have to be able to pay for it.
Correct.
But it really doesn't matter, because if your return on investment, like, so let's just take the Encon, right? So my setup when I first got it, $65,000.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
You could go buy a nice used machine for that price.
Oh yeah.
It actually cost more than the John Deere when we bought it. funny enough.
Yeah.
But so we did the math, and our return on investment was about a year and a half of use.
Wow.
So if I just told you, just forget everything about construction. If I said, hey, you give me $65,000, I'm going to invest it. Well, you're going to make your money back in a year and a half. And then from a year and a half on, you're going to start putting all that money in your pocket. Would you do it?
Mm-hmm.
Of course you would.
Yeah.
Right? So people just look at these things. I don't understand why, to be totally honest with you. I don't understand why people don't look at it on as an investment and what you get out of it. Obviously, these companies are making these products for a reason, right? And people are buying them for a reason. It saves them money. It makes them more efficient. Gets your jobs done quicker. It puts more money in the business's pocket.
Yes.
And everybody just gets hung up on how much does it cost? Oh, I can't afford that. Well, you got to look at it differently, you know?
It's funny. For my business, I don't really invest in technology. I invest in people. That's a majority of our expenses is in people. And the day I started framing adding salaries to the company as, oh, like I used to view it as a negative thing. Oh man, I have to go add another, you know, $50,000 salary. This sucks. Like another $50,000. How am I going to, like, that's a lot of damn money. And then you start framing it as, wow, I get to add another 50, like I get to make another $50,000 investment in this human being. What's the return on that going to be? This is going to be so cool. And then you start to see the return materialize over the next few months. And you're like, I can't believe I stressed about that money to begin with. That was just so stupid of me. Once you get past that initial, well, what does it cost? Or, you know, what do I need to spend? Or this and this and that. Everything becomes a lot easier, I feel like.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah.
And it's really hard for people to see that. I understand why they don't see it, especially in construction, because like I can't charge any more money because I have a Trimble system.
Correct.
Or I have an NCON.
Yes.
Like I don't get an extra hourly rate.
Yep.
So that really scares people. Okay, and I'm investing all this money and I can't charge anymore. Well, how the hell is that going to make me money? Well, yep. It makes you more efficient. So it gets jobs done quicker, which means you can go onto your next job quicker. So you end up doing, I mean, that's how we do so many jobs at once, is we are extremely, extremely efficient. And because we have all this technology, we're actually delivering a better product in a faster time to our customers. You know, we have all these attachments for the NCON, like the compaction attachments. Most guys, when they backfill a foundation, they just throw the dirt up against the wall and run a reversible hand plate compactor around like twice. Okay, but I can backfill the wall and compact it properly in half the time as you.
Mm-hmm.
So now my customer is getting a better product. I finished in half the time, which allows me to go on to the next job. So as that goes through the year, I mean, we could do 10 more jobs in a year just because of the technology that we have. So there's your return on investment. You know, when I was talking about the NCON and return on investment in a year and a half, that was just in hours used. Never mind everything else.
That is crazy.
I'd be willing to bet we paid for that NCON in 1 year of use.
Wow.
Just with, you know, increased production and the more jobs that we got done.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to do with everything. You know, we just bought a Thunder Creek fuel trailer. Everybody's like, oh my God, you spent 40 grand on a fuel trailer? It's like, well, I can't fuel all my stuff and it's costing me so much money fueling up at the pump in my transfer tanks. And, you know, you just got to do the math out on all these things that you can invest in
mm-hmm.
to make your company more efficient.
Yeah.
So,
well, I'm going to let you get back to your Sunday here because we've been talking a while and I don't want your wife upset at me for taking your valuable time off here. But what, I guess to wrap up, what's your common advice to younger people that reach out, maybe starting a business, maybe starting in the industry? What kind of advice do you have for them?
I highly encourage it. I love being in this industry. It's different every day. You could be doing the same exact thing one day to the next, but you might be on a different job site. So it's different.
Yeah.
You know, it's ever changing. It never goes to plan. The best laid plans always go to shit because something happens. You're outside, you're in the weather. So if you're somebody that just likes to get stuff done, loves to just figure things out in the field, you know, this is definitely for you. You can make really good money. You know, there's less and less people doing this, as we know. So wages are going up to find those good people. So don't be afraid of not getting paid well. And if you're wanting to open your own business, go for it. You know, you can't succeed unless you try. And, you know, don't be afraid to go out there. Don't be jealous of other people. Just, you know, focus on you and have goals. Be very goal oriented and don't be like, you know, my competitor has nicer machines and stuff and I can't compete. It's, you know, rent to start, you know, start small, rent to start. That's what we did. Rent things. If you don't have work, send them back.
Yeah.
Don't take on a ton of debt when you first start out. It's the hardest time. You know, you're just getting your name out there. But, you know, go for it.
Love it.
That's my advice.
Love it. Well, Mr. Tom Gardocki, the Dirt Ninja, I appreciate it. How do people follow along if they aren't already following along? Everyone listening to this is probably already following along. But
probably.
Maybe there's that one person that isn't.
Maybe the second person out of the two people that are listening.
Yes. Yeah. Listener two, listener one, probably checking out your snowplow videos. So where do they go to find you?
If you go on YouTube, The Dirt Ninja, Facebook, The Dirt Ninja, and Instagram, The Dirt Ninja. So pretty easy.
Easy enough. Yep. All right, man. Well, I appreciate all the time. Thanks for the chat.
Yeah, for having me. It's been great.
Yes, sir. And with that, going to wrap up another episode here. So if you liked it, go on and share it with a friend. Share it with your family. Share it with somebody, maybe a stranger on the street. Hey, I just listened to this awesome episode about NCONs. Maybe they don't even know what NCONs are. They'll learn about it in this one. So go on down the road, share it, please. We'd really appreciate that. I've been loving all the comments that we're getting, loving all the sharing everyone's doing. It's sincerely appreciated and really cool to see. So I will see you on the next one. And until then, stay dirty, everybody.